Criminal Justice Subcommittee will come to order. Lindsay, please call the roll.
Chair Trunell?
Here.
Vice Chair Barnaby?
Here.
Ranking Member Rayner Goolsbee?
Present.
Representatives Abbott?
Here.
Baker?
Here.
Brackett?
Here.
Bracy Davis?
Here.
Brannan?
Here.
Casello? Garcia?
Here.
Gottlieb has been excused. Jock?
Here.
Michael?
Here.
Clayton?
Here.
Silvers?
Here.
Stark?
Here.
Tuck has been excused. Yurkowski?
Here.
Ex officio Rep Grant?
Grant. Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. I want to remind everyone to please silence their cell phones. Also, as a reminder for our members and presenters, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when you are speaking and off when you are finished. I also request that you please fill out a public appearance card if you intend to speak before the committee. We have a busy day today. Today we will be considering 9 bills. The first bill for consideration today is HB 825, Assault or Battery on a Hospital Personnel by Rep. Burfield. Representative Burfield, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair, Madam Ranking Chair, and committee members. House Bill 825 seeks to better address violence between healthcare professionals and customers or patients. Workforce violence is defined as an act or threat of physical violence, harassment, intimidation, or other disruptive behavior that occurs in the workplace. The impact of workplace violence can range from psychological issues to physical injury or even death. And while there are 4 types of workplace violence, House Bill 825 focuses on just one. As we all know, hospital settings can create extreme levels of stress for the patient, the families and friends, as well as the employees of the institution. Whether it be fear, frustration, illness, urgency, or emotional circumstances, these circumstances contribute to the anxiety and the aggression from customers or patients. So it's very easy to understand why the healthcare industry experienced the highest rates of injuries caused by workforce violence and have a 20% higher chance of being a victim of workplace violence than any other workers. As a matter of fact, the healthcare workers accounted for 73% of non-fatal workforce injuries and illness due to violence in 2018. And that statistic continues to grow on an annual basis. Considering this data, accompanied with the fact that the Florida legislature has attempted to address nursing shortage through policy changes, allocating over $125 million over the last year alone, and including healthcare professionals in programs like Hometown Heroes Housing Program, the logical next step to secure our ROI by protecting these professionals is through reclassification of misdemeanor or felony degrees of assaults and battery offenses if such offenses are knowingly committed against one of these frontline workers. Let me repeat that, knowingly. We're not talking about those who are in mental health situations or dementia or other situations along those lines. The healthcare industry has a very serious and growing problem with violence against nurses. And today we can take an act to rectify that actual issue by supporting House Bill 825. Mr. Chairman, that is a description of the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Questions, members? Questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, are there any amendments on the bill? No. Is there public testimony on the bill? We have Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. Nicholas Grant, Lee Memorial Health System, waving in support. Michael Chusick, Florida Association of Children's Hospitals, waving in support. Jason Rodriguez, BayCare, waving in support. Aaron Ballas, Florida Nurse Association, waving in support. Joni Hunt, Halifax Health, waving in support. Lindy Kennedy, Self-Net Hospital Alliance, waving in support. Louis Valdez, Gun Owners of America, is that the right bill? Yeah. Proponent of the bill wishes to appear. Thank you. David Goodman, St. Joseph Hospital, proponent. Wish to appear. You're recognized.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Chairman Trunell and members of the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee for allowing me to be a part of this process. My name is David Goodman. I am the Manager of Safety and Security for St. Joseph's Hospital in Tampa. I'm also retired from the Tampa Police Department after a 35-year law enforcement career. It's an honor to appear for you, before you, on such a relevant topic. Workplace violence is an industry-wide problem in healthcare. We continue to see that violent events can and do occur with alarming frequency and threaten the safety of our patients, staff, and visitors in the hospitals. Our healthcare workers feel like violence perpetrated against them is the new normal. This violence demoralizes healthcare professionals, especially nurses, who are most often the victims of this violence. In the aftermath of this violence, the victims must often cope with physical pain, psychological trauma, and a criminal justice system that seems overwhelming and confusing. According to the New England Journal of Medicine, 75% of workplace assaults occur in a healthcare setting. While the violence disproportionately affects the emergency department staff, the violence is widespread throughout the hospital. Its prevalence continues to increase. The challenge of preventing and addressing the level of violence in the healthcare setting has become so daunting that the agency that provides hospital and healthcare accreditation, the Joint Commission, has instituted workplace violence requirements and compliance challenges that need to be met in order to maintain accreditation in the hospital. One of the most challenging hurdles to overcome is to change the culture wherein many healthcare employees often say that workplace violence is a part of their jobs. Our healthcare professionals train and work in a culture of caregiving, so the idea of prosecuting patients can be an uncomfortable proposition for some. It is often difficult for hospital staff who see themselves as helpers of their patients to move into a very different role of a complainant in a criminal case. Many patients are repeat offenders, their charts littered with flags noting past instances of violence. I speak not of patients that are experiencing perhaps a psychosis and strike a healthcare worker. I speak not of patients that are suffering from dementia and are not aware of the acts they commit. And I also don't speak of a patient that's in an intensive care unit coming out of anesthesia that is also not aware of what acts they are committing. I speak of the offender that knowingly and intentionally lashes out at our healthcare worker and strikes them in a violent manner. We in the industry are very proactive in our attempts to combat this problem. There are workplace violence prevention meetings that are attended by a variety of clinical and non-clinical disciplines throughout the hospital. We analyze workplace violent events that have occurred and then strategize in ways that mitigate incidents of workplace violence. We prepare for them, respond to them, and also prepare to recover from these incidents. The Workplace Violence Committee then uses this analysis to develop and implement many strategies to combat the violence of workplace violence. Just a few of these initiatives are the creation of a victim advocacy program that's much like a victim's assistant program that you would find at a state attorney's office. The initiative aids our teams who experience workplace violence who may need help in dealing with the fallout from a traumatic experience. The implementation of wearable duress buttons is another initiative. These allow our team members to summon assistance discreetly without further agitating the patient. We have enforced entry at all our public entrances that includes metal screening. At St. Joseph's Hospital in Tampa, we also have extra duty law enforcement officers to work with our security team on site 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We also provide de-escalation training to all our healthcare workers. Each of our workplace violence prevention strategies is a single layer and a multi-layer comprehensive approach to combating the challenge. The proposed legislation is a needed layer of prevention and protection for our nurses and other clinical and non-clinical healthcare workers. I was a police officer for 35 years. I visited the emergency department on numerous occasions during my everyday duties. It was not until I began working in the hospital that I learned of the magnitude and scope of violence that is experienced by our healthcare workers every single day. I'm here to advocate for their health, their wellness, and their protection. Thank you for working together to make the necessary improvements, which will lead to better patient care and a safer working environment for our healthcare workers. Thank you again, Chairman Truno, and thank you to the members of the House Committee, House Criminal Justice Subcommittee. Thank you again.
Thank you for that detailed testimony.
Yes, sir.
Next, we have Allison Kinney, HCA, proponent. Wave of support. Cindy Baggett, Ascension Sacred Heart, proponent. You're recognized.
Hi, thank you for this opportunity to come and speak to you in your consideration and support of this Bill 825. I'm a nurse of 23 years, 14 of which I have spent in the emergency department at Sacred Heart in Pensacola. As a nursing student, I was always taught that patient safety was our number one goal across the board. However, as times have changed, we are seeing more people that are we come in contact with that have way more needs than we can cover in the emergency room environment. So emotional, physical, a lot of it's drug-related or violence, and that lands in our lap. And lots of times we are forced with facing situations that we shouldn't be put in, especially by people that have done it before, frequent people that come in. I hope that you will consider this bill for protection of not only myself in the emergency department, but for all healthcare workers throughout the hospital and non-healthcare workers that are in constant contact with these people. I hope that you will consider this bill for all of us in the hospital environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Christy Jandor, Ascension Sacred Heart, proponent. You are recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for having us today and for the opportunity to speak. I'm Christy Jandora. I'm the Director of Emergency Services for Ascension Sacred Heart in Pensacola. I have oversight of multiple ERs. I'm also the Florida Emergency Nurses Association, ENA, Government Affairs Co-Chair. So I also speak with my ENA hat as well. This is a topic that I'm very passionate about. It's very near and dear to my heart. I've been an ER nurse for just shy of Cindy, I think 22 years. And I've seen this incrementally getting worse and worse over the years. The pandemic seems to have just perpetuated the workplace violence in the healthcare industry. I think as the two folks before me stated, you know, we're seeing this very vulnerable population at their worst, and literally they are at their worst. They are sick, they are injured, they don't know what they're doing half the time, and then they just act out and show out and they harm people. So as a leader, I think I have somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 employees. It is heartbreaking. I'll try not to get emotional up here, but it is heartbreaking when I see the work comp injuries and my people that need support and therapy after being abused at a job that they love, taking care of people that they love to take care of. And, you know, we do have a bill that supports the ER, but so many of these patients go on beyond the ER. They may start with us in the ER, but then they get admitted or they go to our outpatient services, and those folks aren't protected as the ER is. And the other piece I will say on that, because I literally could tell you hundreds of thousands of stories of abuse on ER workers and our inpatient nursing staff workers, but just know that this population is growing and growing and growing, and we have to do something different, because even with the House bill that's in place right now, these patients, we arrest them out of the ERs. They go to jail for about 10 minutes. They're bonded out on $50. They're back in the ER abusing people again. Like, we need to do more, because the healthcare workforce is dwindling. The burnout is real, not only with the pandemic, but with the injuries that are occurring. And we have got to do something, or when we're all at a much older age and needing healthcare, there's not going to be people to take care of us. So we really have to do something. So I just beg and plead and urge you to please support this bill. It is a huge step in the right direction to protect those people that spend their whole lives caring for others. So thank you all for your time and listening to us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Caitlin Borschewitz, or Ascension Sacred Heart. Sorry if I say your name incorrectly. You're recognized.
Hello, my name is Dr. Caitlin Brocious, RN. I have been working at Ascension Sacred Heart Pensacola as an ER nurse for the past 12 years. I've been an ER nurse from day one, and starting in nursing school, I always said I wanted to be an ER nurse. That was my ultimate goal, and the joke was in nursing school, well, you're going to sign up for it. And across nursing schools and everywhere, that's it, the norm. We signed up for it. No, I didn't sign up for violence. I didn't sign up for somebody to go to jail, like Christy said, and be bonded out for $50 just to come back and be violent towards me again. Not only will this bill cover me as an ER nurse, but it will also cover my fellow nurses who work in inpatient units, outpatient clinics, because these patients continue to show up and continue to show out. And it shouldn't be the norm. I hope that, just like anywhere else, it doesn't matter where you work. If you work at Walmart, if you work at a grocery store, if somebody is violent, something is done and that person is taken care of. There needs to be harsher penalties to patients who continue to do this over and over again. Thank you all so much for listening to us, and thank you for having us. It's such a nice change from getting away from the bedside to come and do this, so thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have David Micah, Florida Hospital Association, proponent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David Micah, Jr., from the Florida Hospital Association, our executive vice president. We represent more than 200 hospitals and health systems across the state. And I'll be very brief, Mr. Chair. I know you've heard from the people that matter, our frontline employees on this. But I'd remiss if I didn't do two things. First, thank our chair or our sponsor, Rep. Burfield, who's worked on this so closely with us, brought this good piece of legislation forward. And then second, we've had it touched on, but the numbers across the state that we're seeing in workforce turnover right now in first-year students is between 20 and 30%, numbers we have never seen before. So we need to start looking at all the opportunities we can to reinforce the good work those people are doing, support them in that work, and continue forward on that. I'd ask for your favorable support on the bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, we're in debate. Debate on the bill. Representative Plankin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to thank Representative Burfield for bringing this good bill forward today. Thank you for addressing my concerns that this would not apply to dementia patients. But it is a great bill. It protects those on the front lines when we have needed them most. And it's truly a labor of love, nursing. And thank you again. I'm going to definitely vote yes.
Thank you. Representative Barnaby.
Thank you, Chair Trunell. Rep. Burfield, I want to thank you for bringing this very good bill. You know, my wife is in the healthcare industry, a frontline worker. My mother was a registered nurse. And I want to thank all the witnesses that came forth today, particularly the nurses that were here. And you guys do a yeoman's job. And this bill is very much needed. My wife was subject to violence in her workplace, being a frontline healthcare worker. So I know for a fact that this is a serious problem. Society's gotten more dangerous, unfortunately, and we must protect our frontline healthcare workers. So I ask all my colleagues to be up on this bill today, and thank you again for bringing this very good bill.
Thank you, Representative Barnaby. Seeing no other debate, Representative Barfield, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'll waive my close.
Representative Barfield, having waived close on her bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 825 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Gracie Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb has been excused. Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plankin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck has been excused. Yurkowski? Yes. Ex officio Gant?
Yes.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 825 reported favorably.
Thank you.
Congratulations. The next bill for consideration today is HB 1465, Firearm and Destructive Device Offenses by Representative Garrison. Representative Garrison, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Trunow and members. Members, HB 1465 addresses three areas related to Florida's criminal laws. It adds human trafficking to the list of crimes included as part of Florida's 1020 life statute. It increases penalties for repeat juvenile offenders in criminal cases involving the illegal possession or use of a firearm. And it increases penalties for grand theft of a firearm and creates a crime of aggravated grand theft of a firearm for repeat offenders. And, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill.
Members, questions on the bill? Seeing no members, are there amendments on the bill? Seeing no amendments, is there public testimony on the bill? We have Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. Seeing no further testimony, members, we are in debate. Debate on the bill. Ranking member, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Garrison, thank you so much for having conversation with me about this bill. I'm going to be up on this bill today. I would say I wish that this bill was a couple separate different bills, but I appreciate the intention of what you're trying to do to protect folks who have been victims of human trafficking. I definitely want to continue to work with you on the juvenile aspect of this bill, because I definitely understand the intention of we don't want our children running around with guns, especially children who are not mature enough to be able to access, to be able to understand the severity of what it means to have a gun. And I think we'll be dealing with the bill about that later on today. So I thank you for kind of your just intentionality of wanting to work on this and you reaching out and discussing this with me. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. Seeing no further debate, Representative Garrison, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Very briefly, I want to thank the ranking member for her comments and engagement. I appreciate it as always. Members, public safety is number one, job number one of government, and I ask for your support for this bill to allow us to continue to focus on that effort. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garrison, having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1465 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb has been excused. Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsby?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck has been excused. Yarkoski?
Yes.
Ex officio Gant?
Yes.
Chair Trunow?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 1465 reported favorably. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
We're going to have a little change in the lineup. Next bill for consideration today is HB 1135 by Representative Overdorf. Representative Overdorf, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chairman. Members, in the late 1950s, a Swiss pharmaceutical lab developed synthesized drugs of the benzimidazole chemical structural class. Upon development, the labs determined the synthetic was so addicting and so dangerous, they immediately determined it had no legitimate medical use. Additionally, in over 60 years since development, this synthetic was never approved for medical use within the United States. However, during the last several years, one of the synthetic drugs of this class, nitazine, also known as the Frankenstein opioid, has been found with an increasing presence in Florida. Unfortunately, it's been primarily discovered post-mortem in a variety of forensic analyses. These substances have been linked to over 15 deaths in 2020. There were at least 140 instances found through FDLE labs in 2022 and 34 so far in 2023, and many potentially unknown cases. In an ongoing battle with opiate abuse, our Attorney General filed an emergency rule in April of 2022 to address 8 nitazine derivatives and add them to the Schedule 1 substance list, making it a felony for anyone to possess, sell, manufacture, or deliver any of these substances. To further that effort, House Bill 1135 will permanently classify all nitazine derivatives as a Schedule 1 substance. And members, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions on the bill? Members, questions? Seeing no questions, are there any amendments on the bill? Seeing no amendments, is there public testimony? Elizabeth Guzzo, Office of the Attorney General, waiving in support. Lauren Jackson, Seminole County Sheriff's Office, waiving in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, proponent, wish to speak? You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Overdorf, for this very good bill. Synthetic medications, synthetic drugs, is now the name of the game. They're all over. That's what fentanyl is, what carfentanil is, now this drug. So please support this bill. It's a great bill. It does the right thing. It moves us in the right direction on criminal justice issues. Please vote up on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, now we're in debate. Debate on the bill. Any member wish to debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Overdorf, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Members, nitazine derivatives can be as much as 20 times more potent than fentanyl. While this may be a frightening statistic to the committee members in front of me, there are both dealers and addicts that yearn for the higher high, the next newest drug, regardless of the consequences. I applaud the Attorney General for recognizing the imminent threat to Floridians and calling for a permanent Schedule 1 classification of the Frankenstein opioids. And members, I request your favorable support.
Thank you, Representative Overdorf. Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1135 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Gracie Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb has been excused. Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuckett's been excused. Yarkowski?
Yes.
Ex officio Gant?
Yes.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 1135 reported favorably. Thank you.
Thank you, members.
We're going to change it back to where we were. The next bill for consideration today is HB 841, Public Record Human Trafficking Victim Expunction by Representative Hawkins.
Good afternoon, Chair Trunell, Vice Chair Barnaby, Ranking Member Rainer Goolsbee. It's my honor to be in front of you this afternoon to present to you HB 841, Public Records and Human Trafficking Victim Expungement. Human trafficking is a modern-day slavery and can happen in any community to victims of any age, race, gender, or nationality. No family is immune from this. This bill allows a human trafficking victim to petition a court for expungement of their criminal history record resulting from an arrest or filing of charges that happened while this person was a victim of human trafficking. This bill amends statutes to make a petition for a human trafficking victim expunged and all related pleadings, documents, confidential, and exempt from public records. This record exemption will be repealed on October 2nd, 2028, unless the legislature decides otherwise. This bill requires that the offense committed while the person was a victim of human trafficking for which that person is seeking expungement be directly related to the human trafficking scheme. This bill also increases the penalty for providing false information in a sworn statement from a third-degree felony to a second-degree felony, but we have an amendment that will be addressing that section of the bill. Mr. Chairman, that is the bill.
Thank you. Members, in question. Any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, there is one amendment. Amendment barcode 906733. Representative Hawkins, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since this bill is a public records bill and there are very specific rules about what can and cannot be in public records bill, the amendment removes the certain changes that are not allowed to be part of this bill.
Thank you, Representative Hawkins. Questions on the amendment? Members, questions? Seeing no questions. Public testimony? Seeing no public testimony. Are there any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Representative Hawkins, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Wave close.
If you are in favor of adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed, no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the bill? Christian Miner, Florida Juvenile Justice Association, waving in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. That ends public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Anyone wish to debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Hawkins, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very simple on this one. This is a bill that will give people back their lives. Somebody that can obviously prove they were a victim. And we know victims can be a 16-year-old living with her parents to an adult woman or man that are just being trafficked for whatever reasons. But once they are out of this situation and can go to court, get these records expunged, they can get their life back, they can get great employment without the worries of having that record that came about because of human trafficking. So I'd ask for all the members to support this great bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hawkins. Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 841 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Gracie Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb has been excused. Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Clayton?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck has been excused. Yarkowski?
Yes.
Ex officio Gant?
Yes.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 841 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
The next bill for consideration today is HB 929, Sexual Misconduct in the Correctional System, by Representative Lopez. Representative Lopez, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Chairman, Vice Chairman Barnaby, and Ranking Member Rainer Goosley, and members of this committee. House Bill 929 actually addresses sexual misconduct in correctional facilities. Sexual misconduct is currently only prosecutable as a third-degree felony against employees of the Department of Corrections or of private correctional facilities. Department volunteers, as well as employees of the department contractors or subcontractors, currently only face administrative penalties for sexual misconduct with inmates or offenders supervised by the department of in the community. House Bill 929 amends statute to include any volunteer or an employee of a contractor or subcontractor of the department who engages in sexual misconduct. It also aligns statute with Department of Corrections rules, directives, and policy statements governing conduct of Department of Corrections employees, which applies to volunteers and non-FDC employees. And that is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, are there any amendments? We have one amendment. Amendment barcode number 469205. Representative Lopez, you are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The proposed amendment makes the following changes to the original bill. It defines the term volunteer as a person registered with the department or a private correctional facility who is engaged in specific voluntary service activities on an ongoing or continual basis. It also applies the current defenses to the criminal penalty that are available to an employee who is married to an inmate or offender under community supervision, and an employee who has no knowledge or no reason to know that the person he or she is engaged in sexual misconduct was with which was an inmate or an offender under community supervision to volunteers and employees of contractors and subcontractors. And it also makes other technical changes to improve the clarity. That is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, public testimony on the amendment? We have no appearance cards. Members, we are in debate on the amendment. Anyone wish to debate on the amendment? Okay. Representative Lopez, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
I waive close, Mr. Chair.
If you are in favor of adopting the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed, no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the bill? Scotty Vaughn, Department of Corrections. Wave and support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance. Wave and support. Loretta Phillipson, All Incarcerated Women. Wish to speak. You're recognized.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Loretta Phillipson, and I have two asks today. I'm asking to amend HB 929 to include breasts and to put HB 1017, Citizens Collaborative Council, on the agenda. I have firsthand knowledge of women being degraded, beaten, and raped, and most of the officers are not held accountable. I was punished by the state of Florida and spent 8.5 years at Lowell CI. This did not give the permission of any DOC employee to punish me or anyone else any further. I hope you will give me some latitude in my discussions with you today. I am here to represent all the women who are incarcerated in the Florida state prison system, women who are too afraid to speak up. Why? Because when she does, she will spend weeks or months in confinement, losing her privileges of phone calls, visits with her children, her family, and now the use of her tablet. All of this is in the name of protection. Protection from who? The officer who's put on a no contact order and is now working in the air conditioned bubble? Or the other staff members who will threaten her to retract her story? People are not terminated. Instead, they receive promotions to lieutenant and captains instead of being charged with crimes. I have here 7 employee records that I paid for through public records. I can no longer afford to continue to pay for these employee records or their IG reports of officers at Lowell. When an accusation is made against an officer, it is a clear indication of the way DOC handles these complaints. Nothing. Now we're adding volunteers, contractors, and subcontractors to Florida Statute 944.35 and discussing women's sexual organs, but we've omitted breasts. It is sad that we have to have a bill naming women's sexual organs because when they go to prison, their bodies no longer matter. It breaks me to know today that women are still suffering sexual, verbal, and mental abuse within the DOC system, and we turn our heads as if nothing is happening. Florida's prisons need a safe place that they can go to, a person that they can trust, a person that they can report incidences to without going to confinement and being protected from further punishment. If you have not read the DOJ report of December 22nd of 2020, please do so. Chair Trunow, I am asking you to do the right thing and put HB 1017, Citizens Collaborative Council, on the agenda. We can work with DOC to correct these behaviors with your support and protect the people that you, the legislators, are responsible for. We need safety first for all the residents of Florida, no matter of their mailing address or zip code. I am here to ask each of you and to tell you exactly what I've witnessed and heard within the Department of Corrections. If only there had been a Citizens Collaborative Council while I was incarcerated. Please support HB 929 and HB 1017, and I implore each of you to support and co-sponsor HB 1017. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, we are in debate. Ranking Member Rainer Goolsbee, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lopez, I appreciate you. I appreciate you for putting people first. I appreciate your advocacy. We just heard from this woman who I think that if we have our eyes open, we're all aware of what is happening in some of our Florida State prison facilities. And I appreciate you putting legislation in to to attempt to protect people, much as she alluded to. I think that we have a long way to go within the prison system to make sure that all people, but especially the most marginalized among us and women, the most vulnerable, are protected. I just appreciate you, I'm going to say it, doing what folks would say of your party wouldn't do, and you're actually doing that thing. You're actually caring about the people, and I greatly appreciate you. You know I love working with you, and, I'm going to be up on this bill, and thank you just for your hard work, and just no matter what, you're like my mom said, I'm with you when you're right. You always do what's right, and I appreciate you on that, so thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Gantt, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lopez, for this bill. As a criminal defense attorney, society often forgets about people who are sentenced to prison and count them as being less than human and turn a blind eye to injustices like this, what this bill is addressing. So thank you for the people who are incarcerated. Thank you for the families of those people. Because families also do the time, and families also feel that impact, and I know that personally. So thank you.
Welcome. Thank you.
Representative Bracey Davis, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I echo the sentiments of my colleagues. Thank you for this great bill. I also would like to take this opportunity to thank the person who came with public testimony. I appreciate your candor and your truth-telling today. And I'd like to take this opportunity to encourage all of my colleagues to visit a prison and to ask questions. Thank you so much.
Seeing no more debate, Representative Lopez, you are recognized to close on your bill.
So I'll be brief. I just want everyone to know that I have visited many, many prisons and have had an opportunity to speak to many inmates. Inmates cannot consent to sexual activity. That's the bottom line, and yet they're often taken advantage of. And so we believe that criminal penalties should begin to deter the volunteers and the employees of FDC, contractors and subcontractors who are engaging in sexual misconduct. And hopefully those criminal penalties, instead of the administrative ones, will start to put a stop to some of this big misbehavior. So I appreciate your support of this good bill.
Thank you, Representative Lopez. Having closed on her bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 929 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracey Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb has been excused. Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck has been excused. Yarkowski?
Yes.
Ex officio Gantt?
Yes.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 929 reported favorably. Congratulations. The next bill for consideration today is HB 1543, minimum age for firearm purchase or transfer, by Representative Payne. Representative Payne, you are recognized to present your bill.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. Thank you for hearing HB 1543 today. HB 1543 amends 790.065 of the Florida statute to make Florida firearms purchases laws consistent with the federal law by reducing the minimum age requirement to purchase a firearm from 21 to 18, and reducing from 21 to 18 the minimum age of purchases to which an FFL may make or facilitate the sale of a transfer of a firearm. Under the bill, the person under age of 21 is still prohibited from purchasing a handgun from an FFL due to federal law, and the bill does not remove or reduce any of the criteria purchasers must meet to satisfy the background check required to purchase a firearm from an FFL. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Questions on the bill? Ranking Member Goolsbee. Rainer Goolsbee, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, may I have a series of questions? Do you want me to go through the chair, or how would you prefer me to do that?
Yes, through the chair.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Payne, I just have a couple of questions, but the first question is, Can you just kind of walk me through the reason why you feel that it's necessary for the age to be reduced to 18, even though it may be consistent with federal laws?
You recognize.
Chair. Yes, thank you for the question, Representative Rainer Goolsbee. So I was here in 2018 when the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas event occurred. At that time, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of things occurred, and we voted on a bill. I voted yes on the bill. And I think there were provisions in that bill that I really liked, things like the Guardian program, things like additional mental health funding, things like school hardening. But I feel like it's an infringement upon 18, 19, 20-year-olds constitutionally to not allow them to have rights to firearms, long guns, I would say shotguns, and rifles. It's infringement upon their rights constitutionally in the Second Amendment. And granted by the 14th Amendment, as you know. And so therefore, those that are that age can't legally purchase a gun for sporting, marksmanship, sporting clays, a lot of which I participate in. So that's why I filed the bill.
Representative, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for that answer. So when we're talking about 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, is there a would requirements for them to wait to purchase a long gun? Because I think right now, if you want to purchase a long gun, there's no, I don't know if there's a waiting period. It's been quite a while since I've purchased purchased a rifle, but I have. But so is there a waiting period for them? Is there a period, or do they have to show that they're mentally capable to have a gun at 18, 19, or 20?
Representative, you're recognized.
Yes, there is. There are requirements. First of all, the requirement now in the state of Florida is 21 to purchase any firearm. Mm-hmm. Additionally, if there is a three-day waiting period and a background check, if they're 21, certainly they can have a concealed weapons permit, mm-hmm. which shortens the time frame. Actually, there's no waiting period if you have a concealed weapons permit. There's a few other provisions there, but I think that generally answers your question.
Follow up?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And thank you so much, Representative, for that answer. And I guess what I'm trying to get at, I'm concerned that an 18-year-old who may not be mature enough is walking around with a weapon. And are there concerns, or do you take into, has your bill or you and your co-sponsor, who I work with closely, have taken into consideration maybe some safeguards or guardrails for the 18, 19, and 20-year-olds who do commit gun homicides at triple the rate of 21-year-olds and older? Are there any guardrails that you would be willing to consider to place around them when we're thinking about letting them possess long guns at 18, 19, and 20?
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. No additional guardrails. I believe what we understand is that an 18-year-old can serve in the military. He can sign a contract. He is of the age of maturity, 18 years old. 43 other states allow this, so I feel like we should conform with the other 43 states. It's a reasonable assumption to make.
Representative Gant, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Representative Payne. In 2018, what was the legitimate state interest for raising it from 18 to 21, and has that been achieved to justify changing it back from 21 to 18?
Representative, you are recognized.
During that time, as you know, there was the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shootings at the high school. Again, 22 provisions were put in place after that. I think those provisions have well been recognized, especially the Aaron Feist Guardian program, additional mental health counseling, additional school hardening. What I would say is that based on those provisions and based on what we've seen in the state of Florida, and the RAND report shows there's no significant change in the level of shootings with 18, 19, and 20-year-olds being exempt from being able to purchase fire guns, I feel like we can change the law back to 18-year-olds.
Seeing no more questions, are there amendments on the bill? Seeing no amendments, is there public testimony on the bill? We have Taylor Calderon, Florida State, waiving in opposition. Denise Howard, waiving in opposition. Gerald Carroll, Gun Owners of America, proponent, wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. My name is Jed Carroll with Gun Owners of America. I want to thank Chairman Trunell and Vice Chair Barnaby for allowing me to speak on this issue that is very important and personal to me, as well as many others. In 2018, when this body passed SB 7026, my then 17-year-old son, who is an avid hunter and firearms enthusiast, was crushed and felt defeated by the Florida legislature and governor. He felt he was being penalized for the actions of a deranged psychopath from the opposite end of the state. He was preparing to move off and go to technical college the following year. Fortunately for him, his grandparents, as well as his mother and I, were able to gift him firearms so that he could protect himself in his first home at school. I think of all the single moms out there that were stripped of their ability to defend themselves. I think of other students that did not have parents that were able to, or willing to provide for their own protection when they move off on their own. We expect our sons and daughters to vote, defend our country, and otherwise do adult things at 18 years old. At that time, we expect them to act as adults, and they should be afforded all the responsibilities and rights that come with that responsibility. We at Gun Owners of America urge you to find favorably on House Bill 1543 and work to restore the rights of these young adults so they can defend themselves and hunt like any other adult. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Sophia Rodriguez wishes to speak, an opponent. You're recognized.
Good afternoon. My name is Sophia Rodriguez, and I was 14 years old during one of the country's deadliest school shootings. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas happened right outside of my hometown, only 30 minutes away. I will always remember my best friend calling me and telling me to turn on the news. The sound of his voice told me everything I needed to know. The deaths of 17 students, faculty, and staff destroyed our community. A day of love became a day of heartbreak and mourning, and my lunch, which I always had with friends, turned into a lunch I would eat alone in my teachers' classrooms, in fear of being in crowded areas. Taking shorter routes to class became common practice for my friends and I, just in case something were to happen. The sound of a fire alarm became more than a warning for a possible fire, and its impact will forever stay with me, but I wasn't on that campus. I have the privilege of telling you how it impacted me, the privilege to stand here alive in front of you, but imagine all the students who saw it firsthand and lived through it. The families that had to mourn the deaths of their own young children and those who had to hear the screams and cries of their classmates, many of whom saw their best friend's lifeless bodies on the floor. Our community was changed for the worse, and it will never be the same because of a 19-year-old with unrestricted access to an assault rifle. I am now 19 years old, the same age as Nicholas Cruz when he chose to kill 17 people in a place that they were supposed to feel safe. As much as I would love to say my fear for safety has lessened, it has not. Every day we see a new school shooting. Every day we are constantly reminded of those who aren't by our side, those who were taken away from us. By lowering the age to purchase long guns and assault rifles, only more fear will come. 18 to 20-year-olds commit gun homicide rates at triple the rate of those 21 and older. If an 18-year-old is not allowed to legally have a drink, they should not be allowed to legally own a gun. 5 years ago, students, children, begged you to listen. And 5 years later, we are begging you to listen once again. Don't pass HB 1543. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Jamie Ido, opponent. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. 5 years ago, this body put a lot of time and thought into the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School Safety Act, and there is no logical reason to dismantle that now. You can't possibly vote up on this bill out of concern for individual liberties. We know that because you're pushing other bills like HB 7 that further strip away women's bodily autonomy and individual liberties of people whose sexual orientation don't align with yours. You can't possibly vote up on this bill out of concern for public safety. We know that because 18, 19, and 20-year-olds are responsible for triple the number of homicides as adults 21 and older. And you can't possibly vote up on this bill because you support the Second Amendment. We know this because the Second Amendment says nothing about purchasing firearms. There's no legitimate reason to permit children, and that's who we're talking about, 18, 19, and 20-year-old children, to purchase handguns and rifles. These children account for less than 4% of the population, but for more than 15% of homicide and manslaughter arrests. This isn't a cherry-picked statistic. This is straight from the 11th Circuit opinion, quoting the Department of Justice just last week, upholding the state's age restriction on gun purchases. As the 11th Circuit said in rejecting the NRA's argument, restricting the sale of firearms to individuals age 21 years and older is entirely consistent with our nation's history of firearm regulation. So the only possible reason to vote up on this bill is to kowtow to the NRA. And that is shameful, un-American, and embarrassing. Thank you.
Next, we have Catherine Allen, proponent, wishes to speak.
I believe I checked opponent, but it's okay.
Okay.
My name is Catherine Allen, and I am from Parkland, Florida. I am one of nearly 3,300 survivors of the shooting that occurred at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. After the shooting at my high school, legislation that raised the age to acquire firearms, such as an AR-15 or other assault rifle, has helped keep Florida safe for 5 years. I am here to ask you to not go back on your word and enable teenagers to purchase assault weapons in Florida. In my school, Uvalde, Buffalo, the shooter legally purchased a gun before turning 21. This age range overwhelmingly represents perpetrators of mass violence. But it also hurts our communities, as 18 to 20-year-olds commit homicides at triple the rate of those 21 and older. With all that in mind, why would we give an age group more prone to violence a weapon that can cause so much destruction? Our state took action 5 years ago, which is exactly what we wanted. We don't want to go back to how it was, and doing so would be a slap in the face to Floridians, one that potentially puts us at danger of not only school shootings or shootings in a concert hall or in a church, but also greater community violence. Please do not let this happen. Vote no on HB 1543. Thank you for your time.
Next, we have Andreas Kubelos. Students Demand Action. Opponent wishes to speak. Wave in opposition. Thank you. Luis Valdez, Gun Owners of America, proponent, wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And before I speak, I just ask this committee, for some reason I was listed for HB 825. I'm asking to strike that from the record. I think that was a clerical error. Thank you. Gun Owners of America fully supports this bill, and we ask that this committee upvotes this bill. And there's a number of reasons why. Martin Luther King said it best, a right delayed is a right denied. 18 to 21-year-olds are lawfully adults under the color of our law, of our legal system. We have 19-year-olds that become law enforcement officers, and we have 17-year-olds that enlist and take the oath of enlistment to fight for our nation. Furthermore, we will even issue someone under the age of 21, if they have a honorable discharge or if they're actively in the military, a concealed carry weapons permit. But we don't trust them to purchase a firearm. I find that quite offensive and a slap to their face for the services that they give our nation. So we're saying that an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old could be a law enforcement officer, can enforce the laws, but they don't have the mental capacity to understand and carry a firearm while enforcing those laws. It makes absolute no sense. Again, we ask that this bill be voted and passed. And Representative Brannon, I want to say thank you for co-sponsoring this legislation. And in no way do we support anyone going to your house and picking a fight. This chamber is where we debate issues if we don't disagree. So again, Representative Brannon, thank you very much for co-sponsoring this legislation.
Next, we have Roslyn Raymond, Moms Demand Action, opponent. Waive in opposition, thank you. Alexis Dorman, Students Demand Action, opponent. Waive in opposition. That ends our public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Debate on the bill. Ranking Member Rayner Goolsbee, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Payne, I do appreciate the robust conversation that we've had, but respectfully, I'm going to have to oppose this bill. You know, one, I wish we, this body, would have the same energy around voting and making sure our young people can vote that we have around making sure 18-year-olds can have guns. And I have heard a lot of arguments today that, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds can serve in the military, they can be law enforcement officers. You know what's interesting about military, you know, young people who are 18, 19, and 20-year-olds serving in the military or being law enforcement officers? There are rules, restrictions, supervision that happens. They are not, and training that is given. They are not willy-nilly being given a gun and they're just able to do what they want to do. There are guardrails around that. And so I just think that it's rich when we have people coming up here quoting Martin Luther King Jr., talking about a right delayed is right is a right denied, when that's not even what the good reverend was talking about. In fact, when he talked about guns, he said that he was so concerned about the nation's obsession with guns of war. That is what the good reverend was talking about. And I lastly want to quote from the NRA versus Bondi that was decided last week. And last week, and because I'm a lawyer and I believe in the preeminence of the law, this is what it says. The law that Florida passed, this kind of law is consistent with our nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation. Indeed, the Supreme Court has already identified laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of firearms and longstanding and therefore presumptively lawful firearm regulations. It's because Florida's law is consistent with our nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation, we affirm the district court's judgment. And this particular case says that 18, 19-year-olds are able to possess guns, they just can't go buy them. And I don't see the problem with that. And I really feel like, and I'm not, and Representative Payne, I know you well enough to know that you're not doing this, but I feel like there are times in this legislature when we do things like this, we're kowtowing to special interests. And I know that that's not your intention, but that's kind of the feeling that I get. And I just find it when we are having shooting after school, shooting after school, shooting, where there are children who are dying in my district and who are, this gun violence is happening by 18, 19, 20-year-olds, that we are slapping people in the face when we're saying, well, let them go have a gun. My frustration's not with you, Representative Payne. It's just with the policy, and I want that to be very clear. I just find it hard for me to wrap my mind around it. I just voted up on a bill of young people who are at 17 years old possessing a firearm and voted up on that for them being held in detention. And then folks want to let me turn right back around and vote on an 18-year-old when we know statistically and physiologically there's nothing really that different between a 17 and an 18-year-old. So I just, like I said, I wish we would have the same energy about allowing our children to vote, allowing our children to be able to read, allowing our children to be able to merely exist as themselves and not get stripped away from their parents. But unfortunately, we are not doing that. We are wanting to give them more guns. And I, for that reason, will have to vote down on this bill.
Representative Bracey Davis, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am perplexed and unclear and confused by the answer to Rep. Gant's question as to what has changed since 17 people were murdered and 17 were injured. And I would offer that nothing has changed. So I'd like to take this moment to speak to all those that gave public comment and say that I do hear you. You mentioned you want us to hear you, and I do hear you. because you begged us to listen, and I hear you. And I'm listening, and that's why I'm voting down on this bill. Thank you.
Seeing no more debate, Representative Payne, you are recognized to close on your bill. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Brannon, you are recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Payne, for the bill. And I respect all the viewpoints today. I understand it. We all come from different worlds. Some of us are from the country. Some of us are from the city. I happen to grow up in the country. When I was, we had a farm when I was 14 or 15 years old. I was probably hunting on our farm. Most times under my father's supervision, maybe not, but maybe that's a good thing or a bad thing. I can even remember back in the late 70s when, and you know, I don't know why people commit crime, but in the late 70s at my high school, almost every vehicle had a shotgun or a rifle in it. That's hard for folks to believe. Those folks that live in rural areas, they hunted, they fished, they did it before school, they did it after. So what changed? I don't think the gun changed. I think society changed. Maybe it's growing up in a home without a father. I don't know what it is. But we can't, and I think what this bill does, and I heard Representative Payne's comments about having said he voted on the bill and he liked parts of it and he regretted parts of it. And I don't think you can legislate some of these things. I'm not particularly fond of a three-day waiting period. As a police officer, I never saw it stop a crime. I can tell you a couple crimes that got committed in lieu of the three-day waiting period. I had a lady one time that went to a gun store on a Friday afternoon and wanted to buy a pistol. They told her she had to wait 3 days. She went home. She went across the street. She told her neighbor she needed to kill a snake. He gave her a gun. She came back across the street and killed her husband. Three-day waiting period didn't do anything. So I think we need to look at how we try to legislate some of these things because they just don't work. And obviously, if a 19 or 20-year-old single mother, especially in a rural area where I live, 6 or 8 miles out in the country, she ought to be able to go buy a farm to defend her and her small child. That's just common sense. We recently had someone in one of the counties nearby my county where an individual came off the interstate, went in a home, robbed an elderly couple, and would have killed him. But the gentleman talked the criminal into letting him go to the bank. He went out to his truck. They had to move a vehicle. He got in his truck, and he was able to kill the criminal with a gun he had in his truck. Now, had that been a single mother at age 20, she'd probably be dead. So we need to think about how we try to legislate ourselves out of problems sometimes. I just don't believe it always works. So thank you, Representative Payne, for bringing this what I think is common sense legislation. And I'm proud to co-sponsor it with you.
Debate? Any other debate? Seeing no other debate, Representative Payne, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair Brannon. And Representative Bracey Davis, or Rainer Goolsbee, I'm sorry, and Bracey Davis, I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to talk to you before this bill came up. I kind of knew where you'd be. But some of your numbers I don't have yet, and this bill came up on a Monday, so my apologies for not getting to you. I would say what I read in the court opinion was a little different than as you stated and as some of the folks in the audience stated. And it is deeply rooted in our history for tradition of firearm regulations. But that firearm regulation is delegated to the state based on the Second Amendment and the 14th Amendment. So just like we changed the age to 21, we can now certainly change the age back to 18. There's really no discernment or difference other than the age requirement. For me, the constitutionality of the Second Amendment and the fact that age of majority or age of maturity is 18 gives me rise to want to bring this back to the appropriate age that I think is consistent with our nation's history and with the rest of the states in the country. The last thing I would say is this bill follows the rights of the state to set a minimum age on the purchase of a firearm. This is consistent with the national historical tradition of our firearm regulation. And I'll close with that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Payne. Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1543 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracey Davis?
No.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
No.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb has been excused. Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner Goolsbee?
No.
Silvers?
No.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck has been excused. Yarkovsky?
Yes.
Ex officio Gant?
No.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
12 yeas, 5 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 1543 reported favorably. Thank you, sir. The next bill up for consideration today is HB 1359, offenses involving fentanyl or fentanyl analogs by Representative Abbott. Representative Abbott, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and committees of this. HB 1359 enhances the penalties for an individual who sells, manufactures, or distributes fentanyl, carfentanyl, or derivative fentanyl products, and that that product resembles or is combined in any manner or way with a product that and that product or its packaging resembles any of the following: a consumer food product, a branded food product, a logo food product, has an actual or fake trademark, copyright, or service mark, has a bright color or coloring scheme, resembles cereal, candy, vitamins, gummies, or any chewable type materials like chewing gum or gelatin products, or contains a cartoon imprint. Summarize, anything that has an appealing appearance to children. This penalty will enhance the punishment of individuals that are targeting our children. If a person traffics in any amount, 4 grams or more, the products that I've described earlier, the punishment is mandatory life sentence and a fine. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Members, questions on the bill? Representative Rayner Goolsbee.
Okay. Thank you,
Representative. You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Abbott, first, I want to thank you and appreciate the fact that you gave me a call, that we did have conversation, and you kind of know where I'm at. The first question I have, and I will preface it, I understand the intention of what you're trying to do. My question is about the intent. Hold on, and I have some notes here written. I guess the first question, when your bill outlines, and I know that there's an amendment, when your bill outlines the candy that is enticing, that could be enticing to children, the language could be enticing to children, does that mean that there is an intention that they are actually, you know, distributing to children, or that a children passing by could just see this and they could say, oh, I this is enticing? Can you kind of walk me through that analysis?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question. So it can be both. They could be targeting children with candy, looking fentanyl and fentanyl derivatives, or we're trying to stop where we have extra of this candy type or the appealing fentanyl laying around so that children can accidentally consume this thinking it's candy. So it's to do both. It's to keep the traffickers from targeting our children and to prevent getting that supply around where a child might accidentally consume that thinking it is candy.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for that answer. And I think that my other question that I have is when you, and I know that in the amendment, I believe you may have cleaned this up a little bit, but the bill says that it would require the court to impose an additional sentence of 5 years. So is that on top of the current sentence? Is that 7 plus 5 if it's depending on how much they have, or is that to run concurrent or is that to run consecutively? Can you kind of walk me through that analysis and or if your amendment kind of deals with that? I can't remember if it does.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the amendment does address that and it removes that. But in the original language, it was to add 5 years to the normal sentence. But the amendment addresses that.
Representative, you're recognized.
And one more question, then I'm going to let my colleagues have it. When we're thinking about the trafficking amount having a mandatory minimum of a life sentence, is your thought about making this a capital crime? Because I think about when folks who, when we think about capital crimes, that those are automatic life sentences. Are you wanting to put that type of trafficking in that kind of sentencing or criminal scheme?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you again, ranking member. The punishment, yes, because we are trying to get to a level where we discourage that type of behavior and that type of trafficking. We want to keep this type of product out of our state and especially out of our children's hands.
Representative Gant, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abbott, why, what's the rationale of a life sentence?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question. The rationale is 4 grams of fentanyl, which is considered trafficking, is enough to kill a high school, 2,000 high schoolers. The life sentence, if you come into this state and you're willing to sacrifice the lives of our children, you've decided, in my mind, to give up your freedom.
Questions?
I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up?
Yes, thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the language, it says a reasonable person could likely interpret as something that would be appealing to a person under 18 years old. That seems pretty vague. How would a court be able to make that determination? Because if we're saying under 18 years old, like depending on the age, some kids are attracted to cardboard boxes. Like what, how does this signal to the court on being able to make a determination based on that language?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's also addressed in the amendment where we remove that piece of it in the amendment.
Questions? Seeing no further questions, there is an amendment. Amendment barcode number 493581. Representative Abbott, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment clarifies the person who sells, manufactures, delivers, or possesses with intent to sell, manufacture, or deliver. It changes the language so that we're not targeting the end consumer or the user. It also changes it from a second-degree felony to a first-degree felony. It removes the language of an additional 5-year sentence in both 893.13 and replaces it with a minimum term of imprisonment of 3 years. It removes the duplicative additional 5-year sentence in 893.135 of convicted trafficking and increases the fine from $500,000 to $1 million. It also removes the 18-year-old piece of that. And there are other, it makes technical changes to improve clarity, correct terminology, and remove duplicate language. And that's the amendment.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, any public testimony on the amendment? We have no public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Anyone wishing to debate on the amendment? Representative Abbott, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
I'll waive close on the amendment.
If you are in favor of adopting the amendment, signify by saying yay. Any opposed, no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the bill? Natalie Kelly, Florida Association of Managing Entities, waive in support. Elizabeth Aguzzo, Office of Attorney General, waiving in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance proponent, wishes to speak. You are recognized.
Thank you, Representative Abbott, for this outstanding bill. Florida Smart Justice has been on the issue of fentanyl and carfentanil now for probably about the last 7 years. There is absolutely no reason for anybody to have fentanyl or carfentanil other than a medical doctor. And if you've got carfentanil, do you know what carfentanil is used for? Carfentanil is used only by a veterinarian to put down an elephant or a rhinoceros. Why? Because it is so powerful. Fentanyl is nothing more but synthetic morphine. It's 50 to 100 times more powerful. It takes potentially just a pinhead amount of fentanyl to kill somebody. So why would drug dealers be dealing in fentanyl? Because perhaps in all likelihood, the person they're going to be selling it to might very well die. It's because people that are addicted to drugs are looking for a bigger high. So their demand is for something that's going to give them even more euphoria than what they get before. That's why you see drug addicts that are repeat offenders as far as taking fentanyl, but using Narcan, they use that to keep them alive so that they can perhaps, unfortunately, go out and buy more fentanyl. There's no reason for this to be in existence other than in the medical profession. As far as enticement to children, we do this frequently. If you think about soap detergents come in those little containers and kids used to like it and they pop it in their mouth. Now they're made so that a child can't do that. So we have to do everything that we can, either from the packaging. Drug dealers will make these pills of various colors that will attract kids. The only thing that you could do to make this bill better would be to outlaw or register anybody that buys a pill press, because that's how you make fentanyl pills, is with a fake pill press to make it look like it's some other kind of a drug. Ladies and gentlemen, representatives, this is a very important bill. Please vote up on it for our children's sake. Thank you.
Seeing no other public testimony, members, we are in debate. Ranking Member Rayner Goolsbee, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Abbott, I understand the intent. I agree with you that this is a huge, huge problem. We have seen deaths that are horrific. I shared on the last committee, or one of the committees we had when Representative Humchowski presented her fentanyl test strip bill, that I lost one of my childhood friends to a fentanyl overdose, and she left behind four children, right? So I understand and I appreciate and recognize the threat that fentanyl and opioids have to our people. I am held up by the life sentence. It kind of goes against, you know, everything that I kind of am about. I definitely understand trafficking. I've represented folks who have been accused of trafficking. I understand the minimum mandatories. I've explained that to clients. I understand the legitimate state interest for that. I am struggling to find, especially when we're thinking of maybe even a first offense, right? And it is egregious as fentanyl is, and as harmful as it is. I'm thinking about someone that messed up and their first offense, and they have a trafficking amount, and then they are now in prison for the rest of their life, and no chance to rehabilitate, no chance to get back right. And so, it's for that reason that gives me pause. I will not be able to vote up on this bill today as it is written. Hopefully we can continue to have some conversations, but I do appreciate your intent. And I want to make that very clear that I agree with your intent. I just don't know if I agree with the avenue of how we can get there. So thank you.
Debate, members. Seeing no further debate, Representative Abbott, you are recognized to close in your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is about protecting our children. I have four. I have an 11-year-old right now, and as I shared with the ranking member earlier, on Halloween, you have to dump the candy. I didn't have to grow up that way, and I wish my children didn't have to grow up that way. But this is the world we're living in right now, and this is how we have to attack that and make it better for them. We have to be able to get those folks that take no regard for our kids and our children. We have to get them off the street. It's a growing problem. Each year, the number of kids that are dying from fentanyl overdoses is increasing by 40 and 45%. And I look forward to our further conversations and how we can craft some stuff But if you ask me which way I would choose, I'd gladly choose a prison full of inmates that were drug trafficking and looking to hurt our children over a cemetery full of our children. It's about protecting our children. And again, I look forward to working with you, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Abbott. Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1359 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
No.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb has been excused. Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
No.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck has been excused. Yarkovsky?
Yes.
Ex officio Gant?
No.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
14 yeas, 3 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 1359 reported favorably. Congratulations. The next bill for consideration today is HB 939, Florida Scholars Academy, by Representative Jacques. Representative Jacques, you are recognized to present your bill from your chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill creates the Florida Scholars Academy to enhance educational services inside residential commitment programs in the Florida Department of Juvenile Justice. The department currently serves approximately 2,400 youth and it's nearly 40 residential commitment programs. Youth are committed to these programs because they're sent there by a judge and spend on average between 6 and 36 months in the program. Currently, education is provided by the school districts wherever these residential programs are located. And so this bill would shift the responsibility of educating these students from the local school districts to the department. Specifically, the bill will allow the department to contract with a provider with a proven track record of success in order to operate a unified system of education within the residential programs. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair, and there is an amendment.
Questions on the bill, members? Representative Gant, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have, tentatively one question. It is in regards to lines 89 and 90, and it exempts the children who fall under Chapter 944 from the program, and I wanted to know what was the rationale or the reasoning for exempting children under 944?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you repeat the page number, Representative Gant?
You're recognized.
Page 4, let lines 89 to 90. So it's subsection C.
So this program is specifically just for students in the residential program. So as you know, in DJJ, you have detention programs, and you also have the residential program. So the residential programs are much more long-term. Again, on average, between 6 to 36 months of confinement in these programs, whereas a detention program is very much a short stint. And then, of course, this will not apply to students and youth who are being held in adult prison. So this is specifically targeted to those youth in residential facilities to have that very targeted and customized level of education for that specific population that's not there for a very short time and are not at the most egregious level with the adult system.
Follow up?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
You recognize.
Okay, so under 944, that's children in adult facilities, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
You're up.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your leniency. So my question would be, is exempting the children in adult facilities, is that a logistical issue and not being able to service them there? Or what is the reason?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, the education that's provided, to my understanding, is within the residential programs. And so this is what is being addressed, is where educational systems are currently being provided. Within the adult system, this did not contemplate that. And certainly, we're focusing on these particular youth within our residential programs, where there is long-term commitment.
Representative Brackett, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill to us. And thank you for the conversation that we had in regards to it. I appreciate that. Could you explain a little bit more about the funding of this bill? Thank
you. Sure.
Recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Funding will come from general revenue. And so with there is a fiscal attached, there will be a $12 million recurring appropriation in year one. And then in year two, there will be a $12.1 million recurring appropriation. And so our estimation is on an annual basis, it'll take about $24.1 million to fully fund this program. Currently, the way education is funded within DJJ residential programs is through the FEFP funding, where the traditional funding mechanism towards our school districts. And so this will not affect that. This will be a totally different stream of funding, which will come from general revenue as opposed to FEFP.
Members, there is one amendment by Representative Jacques, amendment barcode 358287. Representative Jacques, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Give me one moment, Mr. Chair, as I get to my place here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. These amendments are a series of technical amendments. Notably, number one, it clarifies that the educational pathways provided to residential DJJ students will include K-12 education, if appropriate. And it also clarifies that the Board of Trustees of the Academy should respond to recommendations contained in the audit report or received directly from the Auditor General with evidence of corrective action being taken within 45 days after receipt of the recommendations. This language is in line with current statutory language, which places similar requirements on district school boards. And then a series of other just minor technical amendments. Those are the amendments, Mr. Chair.
Questions on the amendment? Members, questions? Seeing no questions, public testimony on the amendment. We have no public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Any debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative Jacques, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
I waive closed.
If you are in favor of the adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay. Yay. Opposed, no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the bill? Sarah Massey, Florida Chamber of Commerce, waiving in support. Christian Miner, Florida Juvenile Justice Association, waiving in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. Eric Hall, Secretary, Department of Juvenile Justice, waving in support. Andrew Rutledge, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, proponent, waving in support. Members, we are in debate. Any members wishing to debate? Representative Bracy Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for this bill. Not to be cliche, but I do believe that our children are our future. Shout out to Whitney Houston. I believe offering greater educational opportunities will directly correlate with rehabilitation and reformation and the impact of DJJ. So thank you for this bill. I think it is important.
Debate. Representative Yarkoski, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Jacques, great bill, and I'm happy to be able to co-sponsor this bill with you. And I just want to give a shout-out to Secretary Hall and his staff at DJJ. Just awesome work that you guys are doing over there. And I just commend you for taking this up, Representative. And so, like I said, just honored to be able to work on it with you. Thank you.
Seeing no more debate, Representative Jacques, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the comments and the support from the members of this committee, and I'd also like to echo Representative Yarkovsky in thanking the Secretary, Secretary Hall, for your vision on the Florida Scholars Academy. As a former state prosecutor, I had the opportunity to prosecute a lot of individuals, and a lot of these folks were young people, young adults. And this bill, we talk about graduation as an aspiration, but the kind of graduation I saw had nothing to do with academics. It was people graduating from the DJJ system onto the DOC system. And it was very troubling to see that trend. And these are the type of measures that can stem that type of a trend line to make sure that our youth are graduating into technical schools, state colleges, universities, employment, so they can be very well-adjusted members of our society that are contributing, and so we can stop this trend that a lot of prosecutors often see. And so with that, I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Representative Jacques. Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 939 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb has been excused. Jacques?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck has been excused. Yarkovsky?
Yes.
Ex officio Gant?
Yes.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 939 reported favorably. Congratulations. The last bill for consideration today is HB 1375, Battery by Strangulation, by Representative Baker. Representative Baker, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, for the opportunity to present this bill. HB 1375 creates a new section to make it a third-degree felony when a person commits a battery by strangulation when no domestic relationship exists. Currently, under Florida law, it is a third-degree felony when a person commits battery by strangulation only if the offender and victim share a domestic or dating relationship. This bill will make the law consistent. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions on the bill? Members, questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, there is one amendment by Representative Baker, barcode number 904481. Representative Baker, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment adds the offense level on the offense severity ranking chart to make this offense a level 4. That is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Members, question on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, public testimony? No public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Debate on the amendment. Seeing no debate, Representative Baker, you are recognized. Close on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wave close.
If you favor the adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay. Opposed, no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the bill? Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. Members, we are in debate. Any debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Baker, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you. I'll waive close again.
Representative Baker, having closed on her bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1375 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck has been excused. Yarkovsky?
Yes.
Ex officio Gant?
Yes.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 1375 reported favorably. Congratulations. Well, that concludes our agenda for today's meeting. Members, if there is no further business, Representative Abbott moves we rise without objection. This meeting is adjourned.